Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, and we'll cover 34 to 37. Ends a series of verses of Maharaj Parikshit speaking to the personality of Kali. With sword raised, he's giving an execution explanation. Kali surrenders, but then Maharaj Parikshit explains why you cannot remain in my kingdom. It's a bit of a dilemma. As the age of Kali provides us with a whole big assortment of dilemmas. The dilemma of, on the one hand, a qualified administrator banishing irreligion, at the same time honoring a religious principle that says one who surrenders, at least apparently, surrenders, should be given protection. So the compassionate side and the punishing side are in conflict. Again, the compassionate side is, here's this wayward person behaving so badly, but they're surrendering. At least, you know, asking for their life to be spared, that kind of surrendering at least. Because the other side is they're deserving punishment to be killed. Severe acts of irreligion like this one that he's just done is subject to death penalty. And Prabhupada has made it very clear that a kshatriya, it's not that he runs around and goes killing people, but a qualified kshatriya should be so strong that when facing such irreligious acts, he's prepared, both by strength and by religious principle. So it's a conflict. So the previous verse was, O friend of irreligion, you do not deserve to remain in a place where experts perform sacrifices according to truth and religious principles for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now 34, it ends his statement, and the statement is describing the relationship of religious sacrifices and the worship of the Personality of Godhead. It appears that religious sacrifices, generally speaking, the Karmakanda rituals, they're offered to various demigods. And the statement is being made here as in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, they're meant for the Personality of Godhead. So, it's an important philosophical understanding, and it connects to the discussion of Maharaj Parikshit with Personality of Kali, which is, those that don't understand that, they're in violation of what the purpose of religion is. Remember the topic yesterday was, religion involves principles of religion. And that which is goes under the banner of religion that does not uphold religious principle is not religion. Whatever the name of the ism, religious principle must be there. And the purpose of that religious principle is to facilitate one becoming able to fix one's mind upon the personality of Godhead purely. So both things are principles, sub and higher principle. So aviti purvakam is the phrase from Bhagavad Gita chapter 9. Those types of sacrifices, even they appear to be Vedic, that is done without the understanding that Krishna is the bhokta, it's not rightly performed. And this is also an influence of Kali. Text 34 reads, in all sacrificial ceremonies, although sometimes a demigod is worshipped, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped, because he is the supersoul of everyone and exists both inside and outside like the air. Thus, it is he only who awards all welfare to the worshipper. Anybody know the Bhagavad Gita verse? Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajantesha dayandita. 9:23 Bhagavad Gita is quoted. Tepi mam eva kaunteya yajantya vidhi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but is offered without true understanding. Or bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim rachati. Same understanding, this, when religious principles are upheld, the particular, Prabhupada was saying, the particular dogma or the particular ritual is not the essence. It's the religious principle. It's sacrificing unto the Supreme. So the gesture may be sacrificing unto the administrative demigods, but actually it's sacrifice unto the Supreme. And thinking otherwise is with misunderstanding. And there are persons that promote that misunderstanding to make a living. Earn a livelihood by encouraging people to perform this yajna and that yajna. And how strongly does that go on in India today? Not so much. Not so much. In Guyana, it's very prevalent. I visit there once a year, and it's like advertising. I take it as it's like advertising. It's the Hindu priests know which houses they've been to or not been to, because there's flags outside the house. There's a, you know, you do an Indra Yagya, you get a yellow flag, and you do a Surya Yagya, you get a red flag, and you get a this yagya. So people have a whole bunch of their bamboo poles with flags on the top. And there's a whole bunch of them, sometimes a whole big bunch of them. And it's like a competition, you know, who can have more flags in the front yard. And the priests know where to go, because they can do this yajna, that yajna, and put a flag in there as part of the yajna. And it's like all over the countryside, flags and more flags. It's a business. Here's like me, by priests who don't know what they're doing, and people who don't know what the priests are doing, and it's just, that's what Hinduism means. You do this yogi, that yogi. and then you're pious. And pious people prosper, and so that's the program. You prosper, I prosper. Deal. Okay. I'm being a little sarcastic, but it really boils down to that, because they don't know. They don't know. Something is there, but it's Kali. People are misguided. They're unfortunate. They're not free from disturbance. But when the sacrifice is performed, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, for the personality of Godhead, Shantam Mam Shantam Rishtati, Gyatvam Mam Shantam Rishtati. Thus knowing, if you know that the purpose of the sacrifice is for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, and you live your life that way, then you can be peaceful. And the benefit of being peaceful is not just so I don't suffer so much. That peaceful is a facility to fix the mind upon the Supreme. When one fixes one's mind upon the Supreme, that's where you go. You go to Krishna. You don't have to pray for liberation. You're liberated. The end of this life, you're going to Krishna. You fix your mind upon Krishna. With proper conduct, proper understanding. Prabhupada writes, the fact is the Supreme Lord is one without a second. There is no God other than the Lord Himself. Thus the Lord is eternally transcendental to the material creation, but there are many who worship the demigods like the sun, moon, and Indra, who are only, he uses this phrase, material representatives of the Supreme Lord. Or another phrase is indirect, qualitative representations of the Supreme Lord. The material is indirect, just like an object in its reflection. The reflection is indirect. Direct is seeing the object, and indirect is I don't see the object, but I see the reflection of the object. So I know the object is present because I see the reflection. But it's indirect. So the demigods are indirect. They're not gods. They're representatives in a reflected form of some potency of God. And qualitative, within the modes, that's what it means. Qualitative, gunas. They're involved with the modes of nature. Then Prabhupada concludes by saying that a learned devotee knows the difference, therefore he worships the personality of Godhead exclusively, not diverted by any other. So, mam ekam sharanam. And we need not worry, oh, but if I'm just worshipping Krishna, what about that worship and the other worship and the other worship that I used to do, or my grandmother used to do, and whatever? Am I not fulfilling some responsibility because I'm not doing that other worship? The answer is, all worship is fulfilled by this one worship. And there is no discrepancy. There is no misplaced or incomplete form of worship. Everything is complete just by worshiping Krishna. And if there's some trace of doubt, dismiss it. Masuchaha. Don't worry. Krishna is giving his assurance, reassurance. Then he says, those who are not so learned worship such qualitative material representations, but their worship is unceremonious. because it is irregular. What does that mean? The worship is unceremonious because it is irregular. One sense of irregular is I'll chant my japa one day and skip a couple of days and chant my japa another day and skip a couple of days. That's one kind of irregular. That's not what it means. Supposing someone does the worship every day. I worship demigods every day. I'm very regular. But the process itself is irregular if it's done without the proper understanding of for whom. Who is the real person to be pleased and served and worshipped? So it's, in that sense, irregular and unceremonious. It's done improperly. Maharaj Parikshit has finished speaking, and now the personality of Kali is perspiring. He's in big trouble. He has this powerful king. So Maharaj Parikshit is described as being so powerful that he could stand on the battlefield and fight with 1,000 soldiers and defeat them single-handedly. Powerful. And here's this powerful soldier standing before him with the sword raised. He's in big trouble. Personality Kali, thus being ordered by Maharaj Parikshit, began to tremble in fear, seeing the king before him like Yamaraj, ready to kill him. Kali spoke to the king as follows. Prabhupada's comment is that the king must be prepared to be like that, so strong that mischief-making personalities are afraid. And if mischief-making personalities aren't afraid, they'll make mischief, thinking, what can that guy do? So the kshatriya must be strong. That is the way to rule the personalities of Kali who create disturbance in the normal life of the state citizens. Now, as Vaishnavas, we're not supposed to go around imitating Maharaj Parikshit. Get our swords out and challenge people. You rascal, I'm going to cut off your head. Sometimes devotees get the wrong idea and start, not literally with swords, but, you know, take it upon themselves to be bashers of other people. If you're Maharaj Parikshit, if that's your position, your prescribed duty to be a king, then you should be prepared to do like that. And for those of us that aren't, that's not our prescribed duty. But a king should be prepared and sufficiently strong and powerful and fixed in what his duty is that he should be prepared to do that. Then the personality of Kali speaks, "Oh, your majesty, though I may live anywhere and everywhere under your order, I shall but see you with bow and arrows wherever I look. So if I reside in your kingdom, I'm the personality of Kali. I'm going to be doing this irreligious thing. And your business is to quell those who do irreligious things. Anywhere I go, I'm going to see your bow and arrow ready to chop me." "Therefore, O chief among the protectors of religion, please fix some place for me where I can live permanently under the protection of your government." the modern situation, you put the guy in jail. You can live under my protection. You can't hurt anybody. Prabhupada's comment is that being a religious king, Maharaj Parikshit, was religiously obliged to give protection even to such a person. Then his comment is, what to speak of how much protection the personality of Godhead gives to a law-abiding person or a devotee. Doesn't just obey the laws, but has great love for the personality of Godhead. How much protection that devotee will receive. And what is that protection? He refers to 1866. He protects them from the actions of their past sins, and even protects them from the tendency for further sin. Krishna extends that protection. So Maharaj Parikshit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. I'm just going to cover two things. There's a correlation between the regulative principles and the vices of Kali Yuga. And there's a direct correlation. We have our four prohibitions, know this, know that. From the principle of austerity. Austerity is broken by pride. If someone is very proud, arrogant, proud person, what do I have to undergo austerity for? I'm this and I'm that. Other people, they may have to undergo austerity. But I'm this and I'm that. When Narada was confronting Nalakuvara and Manigriva, they were in a very shameful state. Improper association with the opposite gender, intoxicated, but the root behind it was pride. That's how Narada assessed the situation. Because pride is so strong in their heart, they're thinking, we're the sons of Kuvera. Therefore, we're very important. We have so much wealth. We're the sons of Kuvera. And not only that, because our father is so devoted to Lord Shiva, we're also very dear to Lord Shiva. It was pride. And because of pride, that opened the gate for them to do all these other irreligious things. And shamefully stand before Narada stark naked and not even know what they were doing. They were so intoxicated with pride. So his plan was to remove their pride. And so he did. But he gave them benediction also. So when pride is too much, then it curbs or it reduces austerity. Conversely, one who undergoes austerity, Prabhupada discussed this in previous report, for example, for a suitable austerity for a Vaishnava is fasting on fast days. Prabhupada writes at least twice a month, so that means like Ekadasi. We observe fasting. It's nice to fast. For those who are accustomed to fasting, it's nice. For those who are not, it's, oh, here comes Ekadasi. What do we do? But it's nice. And from the Bhagavatam we're learning that it helps to reduce pride. Now, one can also become proud, oh, I can fast on Ekadasi. And even that becomes a source of pride. So it shouldn't be done with that purpose. It should be done, the austerities that we accept in Krishna consciousness should be for the satisfaction of Krishna, for purifying our existence so that we can be more fit to be in the presence of Krishna, to come before Krishna. Prostitution, or improper mixing of the sexes, reduces cleanliness. In big cities, it's a big problem, the cleanliness problem. You know, trash everywhere. Trash and more trash and more trash. Urbanization is just increases trash. But it's also it's because there's an increase of passion. With that increase of passion, the tendency to be more casual about the association of the sexes. It's not that it doesn't happen in other places, but it becomes magnified and intensified. In urban situation. So in any case, for a devotee, whether we're living urban or rural, cleanliness is a very important principle to uphold. And as a result, it helps to reduce the agitation of the mode of passion. It brings one more into the quality of goodness through cleanliness, reducing passion and ignorance, so that you can fix your mind more fully upon the personality of Godhead. Intoxication reduces mercy. Like Jagai and Madhai, they were constantly in an intoxicated state. So in that intoxicated state, they could plunder, you know, hurt, rob, steal, anything. Their sense of the well-being of others was gone. Even between one another as brothers, they would hit one another and pull one another's hair and fall on the ground and like a drunken stupor. Mercy is diminished. So we should maintain this principle very strictly with the anticipation and hope that our capacity for mercy and compassion will increase. And false propaganda or untruthfulness. Prabhupada writes here, falsehood. This, even in everyday things, we were discussing this in one place, and a devotee gave the example of somebody might ask, how many rounds have you completed so far, Prabhu? And he would say, 5, when it's 4. Why do we do things like that? You know, it's of no consequence, but we make little not-truths over inconsequential things. Why do we do that? It's just our own impurity. It's, you know, part of the culture. You make something that's, whatever it is, marketable. It looks nice because you put nice packaging. Falsehood. It's a tendency of this age. I'll refer to this. Badri Narayan, a GBC godbrother of mine, I've heard him tell this story about 4 times about a realization when he was very small about material world is just about being cheated. The promise of happiness, and that's not what really is delivered. He tells the story. He was a small boy, is with his family, and they were at a movie house, so he asked his mother, could he get some candy? So she gave him 10 cents. Now you can't buy candy for 10 cents, but she gave him 10 cents. So he went to the place where you buy things, and he looked there, they had two candy bars. One was this size and the other was that size. And he carefully, in his mind, calculated, if I get that one, looks bigger, I'll get more candy bar. So he very happily gave the 10 cents and they gave him the package. And he opened up the package. It's this little thing inside this big package. He said, I had a realization. He said, that's material life. The packaging looks like it's something that it isn't. And inside, it's not what it was, what it appeared to be. And that's material life. And that we have that tendency to advertise ourselves or market ourselves or present ourselves falsely. It's just the influence of the age of Kali, falsehood. And everybody's doing it, and everybody knows everybody's doing it. Nobody likes it, but everybody does it. And we just like get caught up mindlessly in falsehood. And it really takes a conscious effort. Certainly there should be proper training. But, you know, the society in general doesn't train like that. Society in general is marketing. You tell them anything, isn't it? That's, you know, to advertise, to sell a product. I don't want to go into it. You know, there's pictures of animals, pictures of babies, or pictures of half naked women. Sell anything with those images, so people may be attracted to a little baby or a little cute animal or a half-naked woman, and sell toothpaste or any, it doesn't matter, you know, what the product is, just, you know, something that people like. Hare Krishna. And it's not, you know, just over on the other side of the ocean, it's becoming part of the culture here. Didn't say just, it's not just now becoming, it's in your face becoming. So old, so brazen. Falsehood. Or when you're traveling, because I travel a lot. When you're over here, it tells you about how wonderful it is over there. And you go over there, tells you how wonderful it is over here. The grass is greener. On the other side of the fence. People want happiness and they're not getting it, so it's falsehood that says it's happiness. And these influences of Kali are very strong. So Kali knows what his business is. It's a very interesting section of the Bhagavatam because it's very relevant to our lives. This is the age of Kali and we are surrounded by it, the influences of the age of Kali, and how are we to remain protected from those influences? We don't have qualified kings. We do have the presence of degradation, rampant degradation due to the influence of Kali, and constant quarreling and bickering and fighting, and it's the age of Kali. Where is our protection and shelter? There's protection and shelter, conclusion. There's protection and shelter in our process of hearing and chanting. And there's protection and shelter by our upholding these principles of religion. One who protects religious principle is protected by religion. Dharmam Rakshati Rakshataha. Those who protect religion are protected by religion. Individually, each one of us, and collectively, we help one another to stay true to principles. And we assist one another in the process of hearing and chanting, and that's our protection. We get the mercy of Krishna. Just before coming here, was in Hyderabad, and the verse was, Lord Vishnu appeared at sacrificial yajna of Prithu Maharaj. Here he is doing this yajna, just like we were hearing about yajnas in this morning's verses. He is doing a yajna. And because who is the bhokta of the yajna? Lord Vishnu. He's so fixed upon pleasing Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu came and said, you please me very, very much. By your nice qualities. So I've come. And I'm ready to offer you any benediction you like. You say it, it's yours. Of course, because his heart is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, whatever it is going to be that which is satisfying to Lord Vishnu. Such persons are qualified to receive such a benediction. But they don't have any interest outside of Vishnu. It's not like, oh, now finally, this one private material desire I can get fulfilled. There isn't material desire in the heart of such devotee. And the process of devotional service, this is protection from our own material desires. That's real protection. Krishna promises his protection. And that protection is protection from our own impurity. He removes the impurity. Very nice. Very nice. Because we don't have the strength, we don't have the capacity. He does. He can protect us in that way. Okay. Any comments or questions? Basic qualities of truthfulness in the society in general. They're not ready for training. They're not ready for. They're ready for sense gratification. That's what they're ready for. Well, you have to start somewhere, and we look at the example of how Prabhupada did it and how did he do it. Kirtan and Prasadam, little philosophy. Like making the wet wood into dry wood. Turning animals into humans. Because you can't instruct an animal. When we practice Krishna consciousness, such a powerful and conducive atmosphere, what are the issues which we have with Krishna, which we have to be particularly aware of and work on? Well, the fundamental issue with Krishna is, I want to be the central enjoyer. And you're always in that position. I want to be the enjoyer. And then there's various manifestations of that spirit. I don't want to be Prakriti. I want to be Purusha. I don't want to be enjoyed. I don't want to be the enjoyer. When constitutionally we're Prakriti and he's Purusha. That's the problem. That's the issue. We manifest that I want to be Purusha in so many ways, but that's the issue. So while I'm practicing being a religious person, it's to the furtherance of the objective, I want to be the enjoyer. And that's my issue with Krishna. That was like your... Navi, over to your question yesterday. Persons that continue practicing for a long time, practicing, what needs to, the shift that needs to take place is not just I want to be a religious person, but I accept Krishna is the enjoyer and I'm to be enjoyed. And then there's various manifestations of how I want to be the enjoyer. I resent that Krishna is the enjoyer. Although that's our real happiness. The real happiness is to be in that position. I'm the servant of Krishna. And he can do with me what he likes. And that's my happiness. It's not, our position is, it's not he can do with me what he likes. I say that in my prayer, but really, I've got my conditions. He can't do with me what he likes. Because the real program is, I want to be the enjoyer. So we can look at the particular... That's the bottom line. You can go up go away from that core point and say, my issue with Krishna is I want to enjoy in circumstances like this, and when I don't enjoy in circumstances like this, I feel bad towards Krishna. And otherwise, I don't feel necessarily bad towards Krishna, but when this gets in the way, I feel bad towards Krishna. And that may manifest itself as I feel bad towards another person. I feel badly towards Krishna. I got an issue with Krishna. Does that help?
Whereas there are people in the position of kings, leaders of nations, they seem to be having some kind of a faith, maybe a concocted faith, but even to the last breath they claim to be followers of God and they hold
sure.
on to certain beliefs.
Sure.
Now, the description of a demon is usually given as an atheist. These people seem to have some kind of faith. Then what is it, how to understand this position of these people?
They're misguided. It's very clear from Bhagavad Gita. If someone does not have faith in Krishna, do they have faith in something else? And the answer is yes, according to the modes of nature. So they have faith according to the modes of nature. Strong faith. Krishna makes their faith strong. He says it in Bhagavad Gita. But he also explains what is the properly placed faith, and without direction and training and so forth, they'll continue their life with having faith in something. And by guna and karma, they're in a position of leader. But everybody else has even those that aren't in leader's position, they have faith in something. Until the point that they die, they have faith in that something. the special consideration is for those who are in positions of leadership. They have a great responsibility unto those who are, who they're leading, their followers. And their responsibility is to be Rajarshis. Not only Rajas, but Rishis. To actually know where faith is to be reposed. And without such a qualified king, they have the situation that you described, whatever they're elected or whatever it is. In the world, Kali Yuga is made up of such unqualified people who have certain base of power, and they're fighting with other people who have different ideologies. And even within one nation, when they elect a new, whatever it is, prime minister or president or somebody, then a new ideology, and then they throw out the old ideology and bring the new ideology. But it's all avidhi. Therefore, people wish for that day when, once again, Ram can rule. Ram Raja. Outside is too loud. Say it again.
In the list of religious principles that we were discussing, meat eating is not mentioned. How is that?
These are the principles. Are principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. It's a different list than our four regular principles: meat, intoxication, sex, and gambling. Gambling is also not. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Shrila Prabhupada. Yeah. Yeah.